One huge obstacle to normal relations between the U.S. and Cuba, the long history of human rights violations against the Cuban people by the Castro regime. Independent watchdog organization Freedom House says Cuba falls just shy of their worst of the worst list for lack of political rights and civil liberties. This is no surprise to James Kaysen. He's now the mayor of Coral Gables, Florida. But in 2003, during Cuba's Black Spring, he was head of the U.S. intersection in Havana.
Well, this was the time when the dissidents, the independents all over the island were beginning to organize. There were independent libraries being set up everywhere. You had independent doctors and nurses. And the opposition was beginning to play in what the Cubans called the Battle of Ideas. Fidel felt that if he didn't crack down on this budding independent movement, they could end up losing political control, and that's something he's never wanted to see happen. He rounded up quickly the 75. What happened was the 75 were given long jail sentences, sent off all over the island in prison. We began working with the families of the dissidents. We helped them communicate and gave them moral support and the psychological support that we're behind you. We think that you should not have been arrested because you didn't do anything that would be a crime in any other country. So we spent a lot of time trying to get the international press and the other embassies to understand what was happening and that these were people worthy of support.
The Castro's tolerance for dissidents hasn't improved since then. Reports of arrests and shutting down public events pour in daily through underground blog posts and tweets from the island. So Obama's December 17th announcement was understandably greeted with some skepticism.
Yesterday, I spoke with Raul Castro to finalize Alan Gross's release and the exchange of prisoners, and to describe how we will move forward. I made clear my strong belief that Cuban society is constrained by restrictions on its citizens. In addition to the return of Alan Gross and the release of our intelligence agent, we welcome Cuba's decision to release a substantial number of prisoners whose cases were directly raised with the Cuban government by my team.
Cynthia Arnson is the director of the Latin American program at the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington, D.C. She says there's reason to be optimistic.
There's probably the hope that the people who will most directly benefit initially are ordinary Cuban citizens, both from the increased ability of U.S. citizens to travel to Cuba, as well as the increased ability of family members to send back remittances. And I think what we have gotten in return is the opportunity to engage more productively on those issues of human rights violations, of the treatment of political dissidents, of the creation of space. There's no guarantee that that will be successful, but at least it's a different path.
But it's a slow and difficult one. Fidel Castro recently ended his long silence to restate his mistrust of the American government. This was followed soon after by his brother Raúl's demand that the U.S. hand over the base at Guantanamo Bay and pay hundreds of millions in reparations to Cuba for losses suffered during the embargo. These demands are not likely to be met anytime soon, but the Castros will not live forever.
There will be a succession in Cuba. It will come from within the Communist Party. And the question is whether there are elements within the party itself that are interested in greater reform and greater political opening.
Arturo López Levy thinks there are. He's a professor and co-author of a book about Raúl Castro and the new Cuba. And 20 years ago, he was a political analyst for the Cuban Ministry of the Interior. He says it's a big improvement and sends a clear message to the future leaders of Cuba.
If we end the embargo, basically what we are saying is, you know, it's up to you to get more from the world in which you live. This is quite important at a moment of critical transition in Cuban society and the Cuban elite. If what you want to do is to promote democracy and human rights, the more Cubans can be in contact with American society, the better. The best ambassadors of American values are Americans themselves.
But others, like Frank Calzon, director of Washington, D.C.'s Center for a Free Cuba, are not so quick to let go of the years of fear and mistrust of the Castro regime.
The president did say that the American policies toward Cuba gave Cuba a rationale for repression.
No other nation joins us in imposing these sanctions, and it has had little effect beyond providing the Cuban government with a rationale for restrictions on its people.
I was flabbergasted when I heard the president say that, because repression on the dictatorship has little or nothing to do with the foreign policy of any government. It has to do with the need of the dictatorship to remain in power indefinitely.
For Calzón, change will not come at the hands of any government. For him, change is only possible at the hands of the Cuban people.
This is a dynasty. So waiting for them to die is not the answer. The part of the answer is something that the president apparently ignored when he says that nothing has changed. Something has changed. The new technology has changed. The internet has changed. The willingness of the Cuban people to challenge the government on the streets have changed.
Now, that change, the internet, is something that has been brewing on the streets of Cuba for some time. One of the most well-known advocates for freedom of expression using technology is activist and blogger Yoani Sanchez. She spoke with me at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs last summer.
Technology is intuitive. It's got a certain logic to it. If you learn the logic to it, you can learn how to fix practically anything. I built my first computer with pieces from here and there, and I remember a friend of mine had given me something that was useless. This was a machine for purposes of plucking hair from your legs, and I traded that in at the black market for a microprocessor. After that, my life changed because I had my own infrastructure where I could place my ideas. It wasn't a washer. It was text. It was graphics. There was a creative process, and that changed my life.
Now on the island, there's a huge illegal network of Wi-Fi connections and Ethernet cables running house to house, creating digital tunnels to prohibited websites, plus a system known as the sneaker net, passing information from hand to hand via flash drives.
We don't have a mic on TV. We don't have the radio. And we don't have the ability to write for national newspapers. But we do have flash drives. We have pen drives. One day, when Cuba changes, in addition to all the statues that you will have to build and the ones you will have to tear down, they will have to build a statue to the flash memory.
It's this ingenuity on the part of the Cuban people that's inspired 26-year-old Raúl Moas and his Miami-based organization, Roots of Hope, Raíces de la Esperanza. They formed in 2003 to, in part, provide free technology to Cuban youth on the island.
Our goal is not a political one. It's not regime change in Cuba. It's not to bring down a government. Not at all. Our goal instead is to empower people, to empower generations so that they can define what their country's future should look like.
Cuba is one of the least connected countries in the world. At the same time, it has one of the best education systems with an almost 100% literacy rate, which leaves an island full of smart, motivated people with few outlets for expression and little access to the outside world. Even on the island, access is limited.
Now, if you want to talk with somebody in the island, you have to find a secure line, and then through the secure line, you can talk with somebody in the island. And sometimes they don't want to talk because it's too expensive to use the cell phones, and they know that somebody's going to listen.
Carlos Ponce is director for Latin American and Caribbean programs at Freedom House. He says an internet connection can eat up a big chunk of an average Cuban's monthly salary. And while the Cuban government says about a quarter of the population has full access to the internet, Ponce says that number is closer to only 5%. And most of those are the Cuban elite, or those who work for the regime.
So it is positive to have better technologies or to find a way with satellites or with other ways to have access to better internet connections in Cuba. But I don't think that's the government approach right now.
For their part, the Miami-based Roots of Hope has been collecting and sending used and refurbished cell phones, laptops, USBs, and tablets to young people on the island who couldn't afford them otherwise. Since 2009, they've distributed more than 12,000 pieces of hardware, all within the bounds of U.S. and Cuban law. Executive Director Raúl Moas says that access is key to being a citizen of the 21st century.
We don't ask, are you a member of the Communist Party? Are you a member of the opposition? Frankly, we don't care. What's important is that if you're a young person in Cuba, you should be connected so you can contact and be in touch with your counterparts on the island and the world at large.
Moaz points to the package, El Paquete Semanal, essentially a collection of digital media, uncensored material that comes into the island through travelers or illegal satellite dishes. All of this is bought and sold on the black market and distributed via flash drives.
Most young people don't get their daily information quota, if you would, from state media anymore. They seek it in alternative channels. And so we know the potential that has. I mean, we've seen the changes in psyche and the changes in the way that Cubans see themselves over the last few years. And anything we can do to contribute to that, to having Cubans feel like they have a voice, they're not just listeners, but rather they can be active contributors and participants in a conversation about their nation's future, is a good thing.
With the government in control of nearly every aspect of island life, there's no question they're aware of the package and the other ways the Cuban people have worked around the internet restrictions. So, for Moaz, the question is not, will they allow it, but rather, how far will they let it go? The older generation, he says, is understandably fearful of the change that technology brings.
That said, the Cuban government is not monolithic. There are individuals within the system who recognize the need to open up. I would say that's particularly the case amongst people who are advocating for economic reforms.
And for people like Moaz, who are committed to making sure a new generation of Cubans are able to connect and reconnect, no matter where they find themselves.